Man, I've got certain information, all right? Certain things have come to light, and, you know, given the nature of all this new shit, you know, this could be a lot more complex. I mean, it's not just, it might not be just such a simple, you know?
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Four Thumbs Up. My name is Robin Koppel. Thank you so much for listening. I'm joined, as always, by my best bud, Bobby Bethke. What's up, dude?
What's up, Robin?
All right, and this week, I'm excited because... What is that? Never mind.
as opposed to other weeks.
I've started going back and listening, or like just occasionally, and been like, every week, I'm like, this week is a special week, guys, because...
It's like how TV shows always have the token Halloween, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Valentine's Day episodes. It's just, every single week is a big event for us.
Yeah. Or like every night on late night, they're like, we got a great show for you guys tonight.
And yeah. Like,
it's just, you know.
It's not true.
It's just Katherine Heigl. It's not that great. Katherine Heigl, I'm sure, is a very, very nice lady. But what is even happening? Oh, yeah. Ready Player One came out. A couple weeks ago, if we're being honest.
Shit.
Hey, we'll get back on a hard schedule very soon. We're just a little backed up right now, a little behind. But we both saw Ready Player One, and we wanted to talk about it on the show because I personally am very excited by this movie, basically, in general.
You were.
Yes. I tweeted on my personal Twitter that, like, you know, employers look at and stuff. Not really. I said...
I'm unemployed. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. You are very much employed.
Whatever. But it was, like, right after the... You know, when you're in the high of the movie just ending and you're like, movies are magic and art. And, like, you're just, like, really freaking out. Mm-hmm. I tweeted, and have yet to delete, which is also a bad move. Quote, Ready Player One is easily, without a doubt, the greatest movie I've ever seen in my entire life.
Nice. Dude, go big or go home.
There you go, yeah. But, like, dude, that's how I felt walking out of this thing. Like, I was on cloud 10, dude. Like, it up. I don't know, just something about the entire, like, the ride of it and the hopefulness of it and the, like, the boundlessness of the world, and like the world was so exciting, and it's like a romantic, basically I was taken on a Spielberg ride, and I'm very pleased by it. You know?
Yeah. Well, and I think it's cool that we got to experience something like that, because we just didn't grow up kind of at the right time to experience Spielberg when he was doing these types of movies. So
yeah.
I'm glad that we had a chance to get something like this.
Right, honestly, and I was having that feeling too, like, there are a lot of like gaps in my like classic film knowledge or whatever, and one of them is like I have like really embarrassing ones that I would like be hesitant to even mention, things I haven't seen by Spielberg. You know, but like I hear people like the generation above us talking about like how he was like formative and like the way they saw movies and like saw the world and like, you know, like,
yeah, man,
because he like such a, you know, what's the word, really pure love of like, you know, and romantic, kind of like inspirational type and fun. You know?
I mean, well, he made blockbusters, big blockbusters. I mean, I love Steven Spielberg. This guy's the man.
Dude, he created the game that we're all still playing in, you know?
Yeah. Like, for better or for worse.
Right.
As many people will say, but.
Yeah. But I will say, like, this is a thing that I haven't even asked you what you thought of the movie yet, but we'll get there in some point. But, the whole world of like blockbusters that we currently live in is like, some would say that like it's people trying to do his playbook but not knowing what they're freaking doing, you know, just like taking the ingredients and maybe like the source material or like a premise but not following through with like the actual like filmmaking genius and the heart behind everything, you know. And like, mm-hmm. going into this, everyone was kind of different degrees of worried about how this movie might turn out. And I was thinking, like, I remember saying to you, if they had hired like one of these Spielberg light guys, or like one of these like just off the studio chain, like on paper are kind of like can do the same stuff or whatever, it would have been very easily abominable and terrible, you know. But because you got the master in there, he like, this is how it's supposed to be done, you know, clearly.
No, yeah, no, I mean, I agree. If they had gotten like the person who is the next Steven Spielberg instead of Steven Spielberg, it would have been a totally different movie.
But also just like lifeless. Like Colin Trevorrow would have rammed this into the ground, dude. Sorry.
You know, Colin Trevorrow is just always so funny to me. It's like he just like personally insulted your family. Oh my god, I love it.
Yeah, I don't think the audience has heard my Jurassic World. Like, yeah, no, he's just the worst. Okay, but he's also great, it's fine, whatever.
Hey, Spielberg says he's directing the third Jurassic World. So.
He is?
I think so.
Oh, you know why? Because he got demoted off his freaking other job. But, okay, so what did you think of the movie?
I had a friend ask me who was interested in seeing it, what I had thought about it. I kind of summarized it like this, and it's more, maybe a little bit more in depth than this, but I kind of summarized it by saying super fun, at times flimsy plot, unreal CGI, and well worth the visit to the movie theater. Absolutely worth it.
Yes.
If I have time, I'm going to go again and enjoy the crap out of it. It was so much fun.
Yeah. Oh, just fun. Like, pure fun.
And I mean, like we were talking about it a little bit earlier, but just, like, we find this is, like, our first big Spielberg blockbuster where we get to see in a movie theater. At least that I can remember.
Yeah.
Let me look up his filmography. I mean, the ones that would even qualify in just the time that I've been alive, I would say, well, alive and old enough to realize what I was seeing.
Right.
Well,
we watched E.T. I remember E.T. being really cool.
Yeah, but to me, there's always just so much difference in hearing, like, this is an old movie that's amazing, you're going to love it, and then your parents, like, plug it into the VCR and you watch it on a TV. It's totally different to me than going into a theater with the same amount of experience with the film as everybody else in the audience with you. And to me, this is really, I mean, really the only time he's done a movie like this in my lifetime. So I was really excited about the movie from that angle, as well as just being excited from it, from seeing the trailers. So I was really glad that I got the experience that I had. I don't know if that made me like it more or less. I think it probably helped my reaction to the movie since I was just grateful for the chance to see something like that. But it was just such an easy movie to just get wrapped up in because it's so much fun. It to me, I thought it was, and until the end, I thought it was paced very well. Huh. And I mean, it was great to just have that chance to see a Spielberg blockbuster in a big theater, new release for the first time.
Right. With at least my audience was pretty into it, you know. And this is like a real specific type of crowd pleaser because all these, you know, the references and things you recognize and make people go, ooh, you know. like spoilers for everybody, but the Mobile Suit Gundam moment, like, people were gasping.
Yeah, that was what got the biggest reaction in my theater.
It's so cool. And, like, the Iron Giant, all that stuff, like, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, yeah.
Did you have a favorite moment?
Ooh. I don't know, there's a... That's kind of hard. It might have been Gundam. Like, that was when I was, like fully aware that I was, like, being really like stunned by like one moment, you know. But I kind of like, my whole thing was like, I was just like, I let it like wash over me, like I wasn't like inspired by like it existing, you know, like like it reminded me that I love video games, you know, and just like all the possibility of everything. And like,
see, that's the thing, I never play video games, but I was still really connected to the movie.
Right. Okay. That's I guess I never
which
realized.
I did not see coming. That was my biggest worry with it when I saw all the marketing, because I wasn't interested in any of the video game stuff. I was mostly just like on board because it was Spielberg and it had that cool scene with the thing.
Yeah. Right. I mean, but yeah. That's so funny. So like when they showed Overwatch and Halo and friggin' whatever, you didn't care at all.
Yeah, I was like, I recognize that, but I didn't really
like.
I loved the Shining part. I loved the Shining.
I mean, everyone's been talking about that for a good reason, because it's really really cool. Like, clearly it was just him. Like, Spielberg is like, or Kubrick is like Spielberg's Spielberg or whatever. You know, like absolute.
He's a lot of people's Spielberg.
Yeah. But just like people have been talking about the painstaking, like loving attention to detail, and like, you know, even like the film grain was a certain type of film grain, you know, like
really
to, like, match the aesthetic
of the hotel.
Yeah really cool.
Yeah, okay, I think that scene could have been a teeny bit shorter, but
it's true.
I had seen the movie relatively recently, so I was like, ah, I recognize that, that's so cool. And then I was like, oh, that's what everybody else is feeling with the video game stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny, like I was so on a like cloud of whatever that I walked out of the theater, sent that tweet, went on Amazon and purchased the book to go and read. But like everyone else that we've been hearing reviews all week has been like, this was different in the book, and that was, you know, or whatever. Like that's always the thing.
Oh no, a friend of mine whose opinion I trust very much, she said it is nothing like the book.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah,
but she also said she liked the changes.
Right, did, so. Because that the thing that everyone was like worried about up until the movie was like adaptability was not a guarantee. You know, like
yeah.
He kind of had to make the changes. But like I'm saying that to say that the Shining was nowhere in the book apparently. Like they played through a different movie, and they like apparently it was even longer in the book because they like had to start the movie at the beginning of the movie. I believe
from what I've heard, she said that it was a challenge where you had to recite an entire 80s movie line for line.
Right. Which is insane.
Yeah.
But yeah. But I don't know, like all over this thing, like I really appreciated the actors, like all of them. Ty Sheridan's getting a little heat for being like a basic bland or whatever. But I really thought that when he was delivering those lines that are like, if done incorrectly, they could be really corny, but he like imbued them with like a lot of like just like pure genuine like love and excitement for the whole universe, you know, like and then Olivia Cooke, who we're becoming very big fans of very quickly, and then the really big thing though, Mark Rylance.
Oh, he was great,
dude.
He was amazing.
First of all, Spielberg just plucked this guy out of wherever he was and like cast him in three things in a row because he knows how freaking perfect he is, you know. But like I really love that Spielberg knew that he would be right for that role and that he would do it as well as he did, you know. Like it's like a loving, sweet kind of portrayal, a really accurate, like, but well-intentioned portrayal of like someone like on that spectrum or whatever, you know. Like, but it takes a lot of detail.
Yeah, I mean, his character was the one that was the most interesting to me in the movie. Just convenient, since it's basically about deciphering him.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, Mark Rylance did a fantastic job with that character. Great performance. Like, that the end scene, I think the ending was far too long. But all of his scenes in that room with him and Wade together were great.
Right.
Ben Mendelsohn was very good, as always.
Dude, love him, yeah.
Killing it.
Like, you didn't watch Bloodline, right?
No.
Yeah, like, no one did, actually. But it's funny, because, well, he kind of came out of nowhere to, like, be, like, in all these movies. Like, so no one watched Bloodline except, apparently, Kathleen Kennedy and Steven Spielberg, which is the best, because he proved on that show that he could be an amazing villain, and he's been cast in as a villain in like all these massive movies ever since, you know. But I really like how he really plays well a feckless villain, you know, just this little punk you want to throw around, you know, like
he doesn't know his 80s trivia, man. Come on. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the thing that everyone's pointing out is just the set pieces and the action scenes.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite scene was the very first racing scene.
Yeah.
Because that was kind of where I knew that, like, Spielberg's about to, like, flex right now. Right. I kind of was, like, turned to my friend I was with the movie at. I was like, it's happening! And then I was just blown away by right. the first race. It was just, I mean, he's so great at just cutting those scenes and
yeah.
including so much information in such a concise manner.
Right, it's so legible, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, he's a master at that.
Yeah. And I thought it was really telling that he chose to play that entire scene with no music, just mm-hmm. like, you know, like that was like just like a flex, really. It's like, I'm drawing all your attention to this right now. Look at how I'm cutting that shot to that shot, you know, and like the sound of the tires and the rubber or whatever, you know, just like really like just sets up the stage for that to be such a cool moment. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that was, to me, that was just like, I got my money's worth from that scene alone.
Right.
Just seeing that on a big screen
yeah.
right in front of my eyes. It was phenomenal. The rest of the movie, I was just kind of like floating around the rest of the time. Like, that was dope.
Yeah. And then the last scene with like the war of like that whole, that was like, you know, 20 minutes or whatever of like,
yeah,
every video game character. Like, yeah.
Really easy to fuck that up.
Yeah. The Hobbit did it 3 times.
Dude, oh my God. I actually did think about The Hobbit and that it was, dude, I've only seen one Hobbit movie and it was the last one.
Bad choice.
And it was one of the most confounding movie experiences of my life because I didn't know what was going on at all. And on top of that, it was a terribly made movie.
Yeah.
And then the battle scenes were just like this hodgepodge of like CGI balls flying around.
Oh, dude. And it's so ironic because that's the one that everyone, because they shot it at a certain frame rate that they thought would be really cool, but it made everything look like a video game. How ironic.
Oh, my God.
Dude, it's funny because like I had the same experience with you, but I went to all three of them.
Oh,
like,
no.
Like, my family has a thing, like, we go to, like, the big Christmas movie every
uh-huh.
Christmas.
Yeah, yeah, that was where I saw it.
Right. So before Star Wars came and saved all of us from that, it was, like, whatever we were left with during Christmas, you know. But, like, I would watch all three of them, like, kind of not paying the most attention because I wasn't so invested. But by the end uh-huh. of it, I was like, who is Boromir and who is Claramir? You know?
Boromir? Boromir's from Lord of the Rings.
Okay. Right. So I don't know.
Okay.
I know Boromir, but like, you know, whatever, Tantos the Brave or whatever the frick, you know. Like, yeah. Tantos
the Brave. That's probably a real name.
Yeah. What was I going to say about the freaking... oh, so you mentioned the story being on the thinner side or the more unoriginal side, kind of.
Talk about that.
Well, part of it is apparently the book, which I'll get back to you on if the book is badly written or not. But I thought it was another situation in which anyone else would have messed this up. Like, taking a... not even bad, but just basic and like not cookie cutter, but you know, like just like standard issue story. And like, I felt, I didn't even care that it was thin and that I knew the beats and stuff. Like, I was like still in it. Like the big moment when you don't know the army's going to come over the hill, but you're waiting for it. Like, of course the freaking army's going to come over the hill. But guess who was welling up with emotion during that scene?
This guy. Yeah, I mean, like, I think my biggest complaints with the story is how quickly he fell in love with Artemis.
Yeah.
That didn't really feel genuine. Yeah. And then just kind of the ease of certain scenes versus difficulty of others.
Right.
But I the thing is, I didn't notice, or not, I wasn't really conscious of any of that until the very end when it really slowed down to a snail's pace and couldn't really, like, drag itself over the finish line.
Right.
That was when I was really only conscious of kind of various unsatisfyingly thin elements of the plot, because up to that point I was just on the ride and I was only realizing that there wasn't I'm not even saying it was like a bad plot. It's just not very complicated. I mean, I only noticed that when the movie basically stopped.
Yeah.
So it didn't really affect the experience for me, I don't think. I think it's just a mild critique as far as anything. But
yeah, like I didn't even realize all the things you just said are very true, but I didn't even realize until I was like reading reviews later and they're like,
yeah,
this thing shoots out the gates and does not stop, you know, for better or worse.
It took me a long time to get back home from the theater because I use public transportation instead of like a Uber or Lyft. And so right when the movie finished, I was like, that was awesome. And then 5 minutes later, walking to the train, I was like, yeah, that was a flimsy movie. And then, and then on the train, I was like, no, that was great. because it's not like, it feels weird not to penalize a movie for having a, not substandard, but like not excellent plot, if that makes sense.
Yes.
But I don't feel as compelled to dock it for things like that, largely because the main quest storyline I thought was pretty well fleshed out and done well. And there was just kind of like peripheral elements that could have been improved but didn't really affect the watching the movie itself. And so, I mean, I can't really like... it's a problem, but like, who cares? Did you see the racing scene, man?
Dude, man, like, yeah, I'm in the exact same boat. Like, I don't like feel this urge to be critical, really. I'm nodding at the guy who's saying like, but this and this and this. I'm like, yeah, man, but I know, but
Gundam, bro.
But Iron Giant versus Mechagodzilla, you know.
I know, like, so cool.
Yeah, but like, you are, the things you mentioned, yeah, like, very true. Like, it's funny, I read some comment that was like, about how he falls in love with Artemis really quickly. Like, if you were a nerdy video game dude and you'd never met a girl before, you would fall in love and you'd tell her you were in love really freaking
soon. That's true, it is pretty accurate.
But that's like what's the justification or whatever, yeah.
Well, that's like what I was, before we went on air, we were talking about a movie I just saw tonight, Before Sunrise, and I was thinking to myself just how pretentious Ethan Hawke's character is, and then I realized that he's like 23, so of course he's going to be pretentious.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
So it felt a little bit like that to me, where you're conscious of it, but at the same time, like, you know, like, that actually is what would have happened.
Right. So. Oh yeah, we're entering that age where we're like, oh, they're just kids and kids are idiots.
Yeah.
And like, that can explain a lot now in like any teen drama we watch. That's really funny. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it was. I knew that it was gonna be hard for me to dislike it, just because I just freaking love Steven Spielberg.
Yeah.
But, I mean the story I thought was good. It was good, and then all of the other action elements and the CGI is just so flawless that it just adds up to a really good movie.
Yeah, did you think I really liked whenever. There's like a mystery or what, like a chase, like the kind of thing they have here with the challenges they have to solve. Do you think they solved them kind of too quickly, or was it like right pace for you?
The Shining one, I thought
was too
could have been done differently. It was too easy just because they spent so much time just like calling attention to the fact that they were in the Shining hotel.
Yeah.
Which I mean I liked, but at the same time they probably could have either spent less time on that or woven the hotel's gags into the challenge a little bit more. There were some, like, the convenience of hacking is one of my favorite tropes in movies. I mean, to me, this is a movie, it feels weird to not critique it for having problems like that, but like, this is a movie that's built around just incredible set pieces and the just like overall nostalgic world that you're entering watching the movie and experiencing it through that lens, to me, was more important than any like quick hack that would happen in The Oasis or something like that.
Right.
I don't know. It feels weird to just say that, like, it's, you shouldn't critique it for that reason. That feels dumb to say, but I am not critiquing it for the those problems.
Yeah, like, there's the experience of the movie, which we've pretty much established was a really good experience. But yeah, then, like, you can come back and be like, you know, oh, that comma on page 83 was out of place or whatever, you know. Like, I guess there's well,
I really hope this is what people were saying of our early Spielberg.
Wait, what?
They're complaining about Spielberg not being deep enough or
oh, right,
a filmmaker.
Yeah, it's fine. I'm just parroting all the reviews I've been reading, but, like, people have been saying, like, for a while people were like, why won't Spielberg do something serious? And then, like, five editions of the Post later, it's like, why won't Spielberg do something fun? You know?
Yeah, I mean, the last one, I mean, the BFG came out last year or two years ago.
Did you see that?
I did, but I slept through a lot of it.
Okay, that I know that feeling, and yeah,
that's, I've slept through two movies, that one and 5 minutes of Foxcatcher. Yeah, interesting combo.
Very interesting combo. Yeah.
But before that, I mean, Tintin maybe.
Oh, Tintin's so dope. Oh my gosh, I love Tintin. Did he direct that or just?
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Indiana Jones.
Right.
Surprisingly, didn't direct a movie in 2009 or 2010.
Huh.
Anyway. Yeah, I mean, like I said, like, this is our first time to just see him take a crack at something like this. I mean, I'm just glad that he did a great job.
Yeah.
We're talking a lot about Spielberg.
I mean,
which, well, I think is relevant. I mean, like, this is, like, it's a big deal that he made this movie.
Yeah, like, I wasn't quite expecting him to sign on for this specific, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, like, he really wanted to do this, I think. And we're lucky that he did, because it would have been kind of weird seeing somebody else try to figure out how to adapt this one, given what you've said.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like, he does kind of feel really perfectly qualified for it, because, like, in there, the article's about, like, having to take references to his own movies out of the movie, you know, stuff
yeah,
like that.
Yeah.
But he was right in the exact world that, like, all this was kind of, you know, and he's the guy, like, Ernest Cline, the author, says, like, the dream was, like, to, you know, evoke Spielberg, kind of, like, you know, that kind of, like, just, like, the tone of things and the mood and, like, the era that he's trying to deal with, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so other things. We mentioned the actors a little bit. Weirdly, this is the second movie ever to not be scored by John Williams, a Steven Spielberg production.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Though it did still have the Spielberg ending of the swooping score
and
clapping crowds.
Yeah. Everyone watching with bated breath and then celebrating together.
Dude, I think he did post-production for that scene, and then the next day was on set with the post and was like, "Can you get a crowd together on really on short notice?" He's like, you know what? I think we could pull this off. Dude,
I think it's actually the same shot. Like, it's like, it's down a long, like, it's a vertical hallway, and, like, they're all looking at the camera.
Oh my god!
And they're all wearing white clothing, like lab coats, or, you know.
I know.
Holy frick! And it's a white building. Holy frick! What if it's the same?
Yeah, he was definitely like, there's not enough time to be creative on this decision.
Dude, there's a few scenes, we talked about the post before, obviously, but there's a few scenes in the post where it's like, you can just tell that he took his first idea, and because he's who he is, it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
But he definitely took his first idea.
Yeah.
It was just, shoot it, cut it, moving on.
Oh, Jesus, is this a Clint Eastwood
time? Yes, it is. But, I ran out of my notes, but, like, what else is there? There's, cinematography.
I mean, one complaint I had is I wish it had been a little bit more critical of what living in the Oasis was like.
Yeah.
I get that that's not how the main character feels, so that makes it kind of tough. But I wish it had explored that idea a little bit more. I was just kind of absolute dependence on kind of just like slavery to that ecstasy. But
dude, yeah. And that's a risky run when you get so romantic the whole time about everything, and like this is so fun or whatever. Like,
yeah, nah, it's okay. Fahrenheit 451 is coming out soon anyway, so we'll get that.
Right. Cool. And there's some things left out of the book that are like they go to school in the Oasis and like they're like society's dependent on it because it's like,
huh.
Yeah, like really, it's like
that would have been interesting.
Yeah,
to include that.
Yeah,
especially when you factor in the economic incentive for IOI to take over the Oasis.
Right, and the fact that it's free to play is so important. Mm-hmm. Making it pay to play would just like literally just like cast the poor out like three different ways, you know, just like throw them to the ground. Yeah, that'd be really.
Yeah, I think a little bit more investigation into both IOI and their kind of like debt collection service and then the Oasis and maybe its questionable net positive effect on the world. Because, I feel like we're in an age where like people are saying these things about stuff like Facebook and things like that. Mm. Where I feel like given how receptive he is to making movies about current events that aren't necessarily about current events, like with The Post. I think that I would have liked to see him do a little bit more with that, but it was also a pretty packed movie just getting through the plot anyway. So
yeah. And to make the decision that I think he made to just really lean into the video game aspect of it, like not so much like another universe or reality or whatever, just like the fact that everyone is like, playing Halo and stuff, you know. It's a little different, but
I know what we haven't talked about, the basically perfect CGI in the movie.
Yeah, like
I didn't notice there was never a second where I had noticed a bad render of anything.
Right.
And is like render the right word?
Yeah, totally, it is actually.
Nice.
Yeah, and like I think I mentioned this before, I said this off Mike, but like it could have been forgiven for having that, like, and you could have like chalked it up to being artistically accurate or whatever for a video game, or like it doesn't have to be photorealistic or whatever, but it freaking was. And like it's like it was just like a really, really well done animated movie for a lot of the part of it. Yeah
I mean it was flawless.
Yeah, and I thought I would really not like the CGI characters. Like,
yeah.
Whenever I saw the trailer, I was like, I don't want to look at that guy with the things on his cheeks the whole time. But it was good. It ended up being fine for me.
I think it does help that you're basically introduced to them at the same time you're introduced to the main characters in real life, or at least with Wade. And you don't see them in real life until the very end. It helps a lot.
Right.
But I was surprised at how easy it was for me to stay engaged with the Oasis scenes and the Earth scenes.
Yeah, I was too. Like, especially when they were at the end, they were trying to play up that tension between, like, it's kind of like Inception, like when they get battered around in the back of the truck, like the snow flips upside down or whatever, you know, like that connection, like with cross cutting, can kind of really be tense, you know.
Yeah.
That was a fun dynamic, certainly, and like it felt really natural the same way, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like exactly like Inception, now that I'm thinking about it, but.
Yeah, there was a little bit of that vibe that I got. Yeah. Just kind of thinking to myself, like, no movie is gonna do this as in the way Inception did.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, do you have anything else? I'm kind of running out of things.
It's to me incredible, well, not incredibly, but happily, it's been a box office success.
Yeah,
just about. Currently sits at just under $240 million worldwide after a week in theaters.
That's great. It's
pretty good.
And Ernest Cline is quickly writing a sequel to the book, so.
Really? Yeah. Oh, no.
See, that's the thing. No one, except for the hand-wringing studio heads, really wants that, right?
Dude, if they make Ready Player 2 directed by Colin Trevorrow, I'm going to laugh my ass off.
Dude, see, that's the thing. There's freaking no way Spielberg's going to direct a sequel, so we're going to see the version of it that's going to be bad if they do that, you know?
Like, yeah, man, it's just like ruining the stuff from the 80s that's in the movie.
it's all the 90s this year, whatever.
Like. Oh my god, dude. Could you imagine if it's just like, we made the Oasis 2.
Yeah. And that's like an example of, like, I think about that all the time. Like, everyone's like, why'd they make Taken 3 when everyone was like, please leave well enough alone for once, yeah. You know? But like, uh-huh. the guy's like, I have this sheet that says it's going to make me, like, I'm going to spend 180 and it's going to make 190 and I'm going to make $10 million. And it's going to get a 44 on Rotten Tomatoes, but I'm going to make $10 million.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like not about, and this is so not in the silly and artsy of me, but it's like, it's not about the art, man. You know, like, like to make, you know, when like a show is like doing really well, like Seinfeld or whatever, and they're like, we want to sign you up for 10 more seasons.
Yeah.
And he's like, I'm going to stop right now. And everyone's like, what, how, why? We just give you $10 million or whatever. But like,
I mean, when it's your legacy.
Yeah. And you're thinking about the art first, you know, and like whatever bottom line is not like the first consideration, you know?
I mean, I just feel like there's gotta, I mean, maybe, but it's distributed by Warner Brothers and they have so much IP on their hands already.
Yeah.
I mean, not as much as Disney now, but they're clearly second highest.
Right. But they're ruining it all.
Incompetence is their problem. But yeah. I mean, incompetence is why we'll hit Ready Player One, take two.
1.2, yeah.
1.2. But I mean, I just, like, where's the conflict going to come from in that story? Like, I mean, it's just not, you can't make something engaging with the Oasis again, I feel like.
Yeah, and like, that's the thing I feel with sequels all the time. Like, I have the instinct that like, I want more or whatever, but then like, from a screenwriting perspective, you have to have an inciting incident and like a first act break and like something for like actually for them to have to fight against and stuff, like something,
yeah,
like when you end the movie with a happy ending, literally,
mm-hmm.
the sequel to exist, there has to be a not happiness.
Well, from then world. The main character has to be the one creating the conflict,
right? Which is why
I don't know where that's gonna come from.
No, yeah, because like you know the occasional sequel when like at the end of the movie you're like, you know, you think you know everything, and then at the beginning of the next movie the main character's like being annoying or like not being their personality type that you thought you had.
Spider-Man 3, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's like, yeah, you just I but certainly don't want that to happen with this movie or any movie, really.
Yeah. That's kind of a bummer that they're gonna make a sequel.
Well, I mean, this is like from reading Hollywood Trades, like they always say, like, on the IP front, the studio is looking for a new IP. Like, when the freaking Peanuts movie came
what
out.
What else is new?
Yeah. Like, when the Peanuts movie came out, they were like, Jesus. Sony Pictures is looking for a new IP. And, like, everyone was like, they're not going to make a Peanuts 2. The rights holders are like, we will not. Like, the sweet old people that own the rights to the Peanuts characters are like, we gave you one and you ain't getting another. You know?
I mean, just remember when I texted you just that headline of Sony hopes that the Emoji Movie will save it, and they think they have a real franchise on their hands, and then it made $217 million. Kill me, dude. Kill me.
I know.
Gosh. That movie made like, it's like $75 million in profit, maybe something like that.
Dead government. Yeah. Speaking of the Emoji Movie, TJ Miller,
oh my god,
who is on his own little journey right now, and we wish him the best. But like, he definitely filmed this role a while ago. Like, I had forgotten he was in it. He was not on a press tour for it, you know. But uh-huh. he comes out of nowhere, and you hear his voice, and instantly you know. But that's like the character he's like perfect to play. Like, I really like that character. It's funny.
Uh-huh.
Oh, one thing is, like, I was watching through the credits, and, like, you know, when they're, like, in a movie, they're, like, images from NBC courtesy of, you know, or whatever, images from Seinfeld courtesy of NBC, but, like, uh-huh. The courtesy of credits at the end was, like, it was like every Marvel movie with the visual effects artist.
Yeah. Like,
the Ms. Pac-Man credit to Capcom, Mobile Suit Gundam credit to, you know, like, Dragon Ball Z or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
It was so long. I loved it. Like, is it... Well, this is a thing we haven't really mentioned. I did not think it was so like belabored and like weighed down with like the debt to all the references and like making it reference centric. You know, I just thought they were like nice little things that popped up. And, yeah. Like, they didn't detract, you know?
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah. Cause apparently the book is just like literally just name checking all these different things. And like, you're like, okay, you know, but this, they just popped up, like the DeLorean's cool. I saw Master Chief from Halo. That was cool for me, but it doesn't matter if you didn't, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Like it wasn't like a part of the story. It was just kind of a part of the environment, which I thought was really cool.
Right. Cause you got to be whatever you want to be in that world, which is cool.
Yeah.
But yeah. So I think good adaptation of a good premise prepared with the perfect, helmer and, a willing and talented cast. And you got a hit on your hands right there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Spielberg is the man.
Yeah.
Glad we are reminded of that.
Right. I think we're just happy it was a success, right? Like,
yeah.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys. Let's get out of here. Go see this movie this weekend. We recommend it.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly. Yeah. All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you guys in the next one. I just want to see the light. All right, that is our show, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Just some plug time here. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Reddit, and Patreon at Four Thumbs Pod to continue the conversation or support if you're so inclined. Questions, comments, constructive criticism, all welcome. Our theme song is Light by San Holo. Our logo was found on Google Images. You can find this podcast on iTunes, Spreaker, and YouTube. And please share that iTunes link if you share it with anybody. Thank you so much to our lovely podcast hosts, Spreaker.com. Thanks to Bobby for being awesome as always. And join us very soon for another conversation. Thanks, guys. Have a great one.